I have caused mass confusion today by making a last-minute switch. I had thought that I might preach on the Jonah text this morning and decided late in the week that I would preach the gospel text. So thank you for rolling with the confusion. I would remind you of that text we read just a little bit ago, in which Jesus came and called his first disciples as they were fishing, called them to be fishers of people. Now may the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our rock and our redeemer. I've loved Uncle Joe from the moment I met him, but I have to admit that when we're together, we make a bit of an odd pair. I've paved for myself a life and a vocation which require me to be fluent in four different dialects of dork speak. I'm a conversant person in esoteric theology and in biblical hermeneutics. Uncle Joe knows Harleys and sci-fi movies. I'm a clean-cut kid who feels a little bit uncomfortable if his polo shirt comes a little untucked. Uncle Joe prefers flannel shirts and comfortable jeans. He likes to experiment with his beard, but at any given time, he might look like someone that you wouldn't want to meet in a dark alley, except for that big teddy bear smile that he's always wearing. In fact, Uncle Joe's the kind of guy who wouldn't know which is the greater compliment, teddy bear or guy you wouldn't want to meet in a dark alley. But in spite of the differences we have, we very seldom run out of things to talk about. And on one occasion, that topic happened to be fishing. I told Uncle Joe about my experience of fishing as a kid. My grandparents had a lake house where I could go and dig an old rusty pole out of a closet and ask my dad to tie a hook on the end of the line. And while he fiddled with the tangled mess of line, I would go swimming, or maybe even ride on a jet ski. And then sometime later, I would discover magically that the reel had all of the old line cut away from it, and fresh new line was put in its place, and there was a hook tied on the end, thanks to my dad. So I'd go in the kitchen and ask my grandmother for a little piece of bacon, and she'd get some out and cut it up into little hook-sized pieces while I went in the other room and had a snack. And then, with bait set, I'd walk down to the dock and I'd ask Granddad to help me put a bobber on the line. And while he was working on that, I would go and slide down the water slide a few times and inevitably forget about what he was working on for maybe half an hour or so, when I would look over and see the pole I had gotten out of the closet secured to the pier, bobber affixed, and now bobbing up and down perilously in the water. I'd caught a fish. After reeling it in and taking a look at my prized 2-ounce catfish, I'd call my dad to come and take it off the hook. Uncle Joe responded to my experience of fishing without words, recognizing that I had no idea what fishing really is. He simply loaded a tackle box and 2 poles into the back of his truck, and inside half of an hour, we were on a long pier in the bay near his South Houston home. The pole that he handed me didn't have a push button on it, and there was no picture of Snoopy on the side, so I didn't know what to do with it. He showed me how to cast, and my first attempt left the reel looking like a tiny spaceship tangled in a spider web. But I got a little better with some practice. And thanks to Uncle Joe, I even learned to tie lures on and how fast you're supposed to reel them back in and where to cast and what kind of fish were below, and a handful of other lessons about fishing. How anyone could possibly teach that much in such a short period of time is beyond me. But what's truly incredible about Uncle Joe is that when he did it, the cigar never even fell from his mouth. I found myself wanting to prove that I could do it, that I could fish. I wanted Uncle Joe to be proud. And so far, I had been soaking up all of the peripheral lessons quite well. So I'd been cut free to practice my new skills on my own. We each occupied a different part of the pier. In cast after cast, we were just taking in the wonders of a calm sea breeze. And then something happened. I felt a tiny jolt on the end of my line. And then I felt it again. And I knew what to do, but my heart raced with excitement. I was about to catch my first fish. When I felt the jolt again, I gave the rod a yank, and the panicked fervor at the other end let me know I had him. And so I reeled the little guy in as fast as I could. I was only moments away from proving myself worthy of my space on the dock, but I had to get through the hardest part first. I had to get the fish off the hook. "Okay, Brent, you can do this." I grabbed the fish with my left hand, and I tucked the rod under my arm, and I started working at the hook. He was a slippery little bugger. I had to hold him really tightly as he wriggled. I yanked, and I pulled, and I twisted, and I re-gripped for another try, but before I could get to work again, I heard a voice behind me. "Give me that fish before you squeeze its guts out, will you?" Reflecting on that moment, thinking about that poor fish in my left hand, and Uncle Joe's apt description of the process of removing the hook, I realize this fishing thing isn't so pleasant for the fish. Have you ever compared that idea up against our gospel text for this morning? Jesus says here, in the words of the NRSV translation, "I will make you fish for people." What on earth does that mean? We're going to capture people against their will and reel them squirming and thrashing into a place where they can't breathe? Well, of course we don't mean that. But the stretched metaphor has had unintended consequences in some parts of the church. As a teenager, some of my friends and I wore fish hooks on the bill of our ball caps as reminders of our responsibility to evangelize all who we knew. And evangelism for us was about convincing people of the error of their ways and their thinking and replacing them with other ways of being and thinking, coincidentally, the ways we espoused. We were taught methods of manipulating a conversation into matters of belief in the most expedient ways possible, and we're given the tools we need to argue folks into recognition of the untruth of their beliefs and the truth of ours. I don't know if the times have changed, or maybe it's just my geography now, but I find this approach to evangelism, this understanding of what it means to fish for people, less popular. I don't hear it so often anymore. But even so, we don't spend a great deal of time these days talking about what evangelism is and what it should look like. So as often as I tell you that faith and love are verbs, they require action, on this occasion I'm going to point out that fishing, as Jesus told his disciples, is a noun. There is a valuable nuance swimming in the depths of our gospel story this morning. The word for fish, when Jesus calls the disciples to fish, is actually a noun. In the Greek, it doesn't say, as it is so often translated, fish for people, but literally, I will make you fishers of the people. Splitting hairs again, Pastor. Wonderful. If we hear the verb in the NRSV, we hear Jesus calling his disciples to a particular kind of action, fishing. The calling has everything to do with what the disciples do. If they and we are called to do something specific, then we put all of our effort into learning to fulfill that task. We learn to hook 'em, net 'em, and haul 'em in. If, on the other hand, we hear the more accurate noun, then we hear Jesus calling the disciples and us to a particular kind of being, fishers. If we're called to be something, here we put all of our effort into living a kind of identity. In short, the call of Jesus may well require action, but the nucleus of the call of Jesus has more to do with vocation. Jesus has called these men in Galilee to reimagine their own vocation as if it were centered around people, fishers of people. If these first disciples had been carpenters, they would have been called to have been carpenters oriented toward people. Or if they had been tax collectors, they would have been called to be tax collectors oriented toward people. Don't let that strain your imagination too much. What if we have different careers? What would it mean to be an accountant oriented toward people? Or an architect oriented toward people? A counselor, an engineer, a nurse, an artist, a banker. What would it mean to be a retiree oriented toward people? We may imagine here learning to employ our particular careers in the service of our fellow people, and that would be a pretty good start. But even that borders on focusing on what we do over who we are in relation to people. That's what vocation is. It's who we are. It begs the question of motive. Why do we go to work each day in all of these different fields? Why do we do the 9-to-5? Why do we expend so much energy? Is it to survive and pay the bills? Is it to amass wealth and provide for our future? Is it to gain influence and power? Or is it so that we might put ourselves among our fellow people in the service, orienting ourselves toward them? You know, this view might not actually change much of what we do. Just because you're oriented toward others doesn't mean that you can stop accepting a paycheck or stop charging for the services you render. We do have to take care of ourselves, but it might change things internally. We might begin to view our daily efforts as an integral part of the human fabric, as if we're sharing in this life experience together. It might affect decisions on the use of resources within our business. It might affect decisions on what to do with the proceeds of our work. It might, as it did for the disciples, lead us to reimagine our work altogether, as in, put your nets down, leave the boat, and follow Jesus into the service of all people. Back there on that dingy old fishing dock with Uncle Joe, I remember one other thing. We had caught a few fish, And I'd even taken some of them off the hook myself. At some point, though, the fish stopped biting, and the night fell silent. So Uncle Joe asked me how work at the church was going, and I filled him in. And the conversation spurred him to tell me a bit about the church he attends and some of the things they do. He had joined with a handful of other men who kept their ear to the ground for people whose homes were in disrepair, either because they couldn't afford to fix them or because they were too elderly to do anything. And those men would get together and pool the needs they'd heard about and then pass the stories around, asking for a few bucks here and a few bucks there. Once they had the funds, they'd all get together, go pick up the materials, strap on their tool belts, and set about the work of redemption in someone's world, bringing back running water or cooler temperatures in the Texas summer, or shoring up the foundation of someone's home, whatever needed doing. And then, without any deep theology or any convincing rhetoric, the words slipped out of Uncle Joe's mouth and past that smoldering cigar. I figure, if you're helping people that really need it, you're doing something right. It's funny. I remember now that as Uncle Joe was teaching me to fish, he was also teaching me to be a fisher. Thanks be to God. Amen.